Let's do this. Woo! Ring the bell. This is Between the Ropes.
Oh, you're going for the dirt, for the behind-the-scenes stuff.
It's time to get Between the Ropes. Between the Ropes.
Hey, everybody. Brian Fritz here. Thanks for listening to the Between the Ropes podcast. Appreciate everybody subscribing to the podcast as well. This is the third podcast of the week. I don't have a regular schedule other than trying to do a podcast on Tuesday. Sometimes it's Wednesday, depending on schedules, where me and someone else talk about Raw and kind of the week in wrestling news. But I try to do more podcasts when I can get guests, and it just turned out this week that I got more guests. Case in point, this podcast right here, two guests. One of them will be Ring of Honor star ACH. That will be the second interview coming up. Best in the World pay-per-view is coming up in a few weeks, so we will talk about that. Before we get to ACH, a conversation with WWE superstar Dolph Ziggler, who is part of the upcoming season two of Swerved on the WWE Network. Hope everybody got to check out the podcast earlier in the week, myself and Michael Wiseman talking about Raw and some other news of the week. Plus, we dive a little bit deeper into possible expectations and things we might see when it comes to the upcoming WWE draft and the brand split. Plus, I sat down with now former WWE announcer Rich Bocchini. People know him as Rich Brennan. That was a great conversation with him. He and I both live here in Orlando, so we had a chance to sit down and talk in the radio studio for a while. So that was a good conversation, and I really like Rich. I thought he was a fantastic broadcaster for WWE, and even his prior work, he's done great work as a sports broadcaster, and I hope that somebody grabs him very quickly for another job, because he does a great job. He's a professional. He's very good at what he does, and he deserves to have a great job in sports broadcasting. I did not like what happened with him with WWE. I don't know exactly how it all went down. I know that Rich was grateful for his time there, but, you know, like anybody else, when you lose your job, it's going to hurt. And it hurt him, and I think it hurts fans that somebody that was as good as Rich is gone from WWE, but unfortunately, things don't always turn out the way that you want in life. So before we get to the interviews, I did want to mention something else. So over the last couple of weeks, Michael Wiseman has been back on the podcast. And I just wanted to throw this out and kind of explain to everybody kind of how this works, because Michael and I are good friends. We've been good friends for a few years now. We just happened to meet and we have good chemistry. I think we're very similar in our personalities and kind of our likes and everything too. So, you know, it's been great having Michael back on the podcast. He was a regular, and then he had to step away because of just his work schedule changed with his day job. And that's kind of where it's been right now. And we're just trying to find a way to work him back in. And I'm not saying it's permanent that Michael is going to be back on the podcast, but I will say this. I like having Michael on the podcast. I want him on the podcast. He knows it. I've told him this time and time again. And I'm hopeful that he will be a regular on the podcast as well. I think a lot of people enjoy hearing Michael on there as well, with his, you know, intelligence and his banter and his sense of humor. Like I said, I think we have really good chemistry together. And I like doing the show together with him. And I hope that Michael's schedule is going to allow it and he can be a regular part of the show. And we can continue to do shows going forward and grow the podcast. You know, it has been growing more and more, and I've been lucky enough to get some bigger name guests again, and I've always been able to get some WWE guests just as much as anybody else, basically, which is not all the time, but on a pretty regular basis, which I'm very thankful for. But, you know, I want Michael to be a regular part of this podcast, and that's why we have a lot of fun together, and we threw out the, you know, Welcome Back Wiseman hashtag on Twitter, which you could still use. Hashtag Welcome Back Wiseman if you want him to continue on the show. But I just wanted to throw that out there. I don't want anybody's expectations being too high. But at the same time, we want Michael to be a part of the podcast. I enjoy having a conversation with him each and every week. We have a lot of fun with it. And I want him to stick around. And I hope you do too. So let's get to the interviews. First up, my talk with WWE superstar Dolph Ziggler. He's part of Swerved Season 2. That season drops on Monday night, immediately following Raw on the WWE Network. All 9 episodes are coming out at once. It's the first time that WWE has ever done that, where all of the episodes of one of their shows have come out at one time, kind of Netflix style, so you can binge watch. So it's a new thing for them, and there's some twists and turns to the season of Swerve compared to season 1. So here's my conversation with Dolph Ziggler talking about the upcoming season of Swerve, plus we talk about the upcoming brand split as well. He is one of the WWE superstars. I'll be appearing in season 2 of Swerve, with the entire season premiering on the WWE Network Monday, immediately following Raw. He is the show-off Dolph Ziggler. So what's the biggest difference in your eyes between season 2 compared to season 1 of Swerve?
In season 1, we had so many superstars on the edge of their seats every week at television, waiting to see who was going to get screwed with that day. And now we've turned them all on our side. So we're using them as props in our evil genius of these pranks. So now it's more having some fun with the WWE superstars on our side, having some fun at some fans' expenses, and then of course, at the end of the day, putting a smile on their face and having a blast, having a good time.
What was that like during season 1? Because so many guys didn't see it coming, and there was some pretty elaborate pranks being done.
There was tons of elaborate pranks. So much that when they made it seem like we were pranking someone else. It was actually on you. There were so many different swerves. It came down to nobody trusted anybody. And I would walk in some days and get a text message that said, "I don't know if I'm involved with you today, but stay the hell away from me." It's just from random people, random superstars and divas who didn't want to be screwed with. So everybody was looking over their back, over their shoulders, didn't trust anybody. But now we're kind of using that to our advantage. We have superstars in different roles that you wouldn't even recognize, but now
They're all
on our side.
I was going to say, how many people were flat out scared during season 1, and now they're like, "Oh, I want to be a part of it. Please let me do something."
Well, that's the thing. It becomes so screwed up. You get so mad or scared or freaked out, and then when it's all over with, you have a blast and go, "Okay, I have the perfect idea to go get somebody else with this." That just goes to show how sadistic we all are at the end of the day, but also great sports about it, because the WWE superstars, no one ever went, too far with it. Anyone who got through it was so polite, and at the end of the day would just go on and go, "Hey, all right, you got me. Let's go get somebody else."
Well, your lucky Kofi Kingston is a likable guy, because, I mean, that guy should be blind right now after that prank last year.
Oh, I remember watching it, and I couldn't believe it. I didn't think it was real. But luckily it all worked out, and everybody was safe. But watching that visual that explode in the face, I've never seen anything like that.
So what's the best prank you've pulled, or best one you've seen pulled on somebody?
I had a blast this year. I don't want to give too much away, but Paige and myself were go on blind date, and we are each controlling a shock collar on the other one's upper thigh, and it becomes so intense that thinking about it right now has sweat going down the back of my neck. It was so intense and so scary, waiting to be zapped with a shock collar on high, that we ended up having the most fun, with the most scary fun that I've had in a long time.
Is there any chance that either of you lost control of bodily functions during that?
I mean, there's a chance, and I'm not going to say, I don't want to give away any spoilers. I want everyone to check out these episodes. But I guarantee it's one of the most uncomfortable things you will ever see us work, no matter what happens.
So who's the worst person in the locker room at taking a joke?
Miz is a bit of a sore loser when it comes to things, and so that's what makes us want to get him more. And he's kind of a friend of mine, so it's good to see him being Hollywood Miz and walking around, and it's fun to take him, off his high horse every once in a while. But for the most part, and even with Miz, the WWE superstars, they're so good to the fans and everything that they do. That's what makes them such great captains, I would guess, because they'll go along with, they'll roll with the punches, go above and beyond and try and still help it, even though we're screwing with them. At the end of the day, nobody took it too seriously, and eventually wanted to go out and somebody else.
Miz is too competitive, because I think he's lost like over half of his championship belts to Xavier Woods and different guys from playing video games.
That's actually pretty funny. I believe he's lost the United States title to Clark Duke over a game of beer pong also, so you never know.
Jeez. That guy's not going to have anything on his wall here pretty soon.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure he'll have lots of paintings and Maurice around the house.
So what is it about wrestlers that make you guys so good at pranking? Is it just because you've always got ideas swirling around your mind, or the amount of downtime that you have when you're at the buildings? What is it?
I'll be honest. The downtime is usually really busy time. So, but I think when it comes to, there has to be so much creativity that goes into a wrestling match, and it goes into a character-driven story, anything that you're pitching, anything you want to be a part of, putting on these great shows for the fans. So they have these ideas and they try and put them into real life situations. And with all this input that's just sitting in those brains that's been used to, it's fun to pull it out of them. And even whether we have a set idea for something or not, and then you see someone come in and they have this opposite out of the box idea and you go, yes. And then everyone starts building off it. It just makes the show that much better.
WWE just announced recently that there's going to be a brand split. SmackDown's going to be going live beginning on July 19th, and Raw and SmackDown are going to be different shows. What was your reaction when you found out about it?
I think it's great. That brand extension is great for everyone. It will initiate more of a competition between the brands, which can only lead to good things. We're going to have to be throwing more things against the wall, trying to see what sticks and running with it, and there's going to be a ratings competition. There's going to be competition for bragging rights. And the most important part of this entire thing, as someone who studies the business and wrestling and sports entertainment, the most important part is that it's an opportunity for several superstars and divas to go above and beyond and become much bigger and much more of an important part of their brand than they ever were before. That's the part I like.
Because this has been done before, is there anything that you would like to see be done differently this time around with the brand extension?
It already is different. There is an entire roster of NXT superstars who are drooling to get their hands on WWE superstars. There is a fan base behind them. Once you do the extension, set up the two different brands, not only is it brand extension and one show's live and one show's taped, it is now two A shows, theoretically, going head-to-head live days after each other, one day after each other, competing to be the best. That is the very cool part. That's the difference. It wasn't like that before, and it used to be maybe half as much talent as there is now. There is three full rosters going to attempt to be broken up into two solid rosters, and it's going to be a great loop no matter who the fans are or what side you're on.
How would you compare this era when it comes to the amount of talent and the guys that are on there compared to other eras in WWE history?
I've actually gotten some flack for this before. I've never in my life, as someone who watches wrestling since I was 5 years old, never have I seen more talent, more competent wrestling, more exciting moves, more anything in my entire life than right now. And I'm sure in 10 years, it'll be blowing this era out of the water. But right now, there are so many great wrestlers, so many great superstars, divas, not getting a chance because there's so much competition that maybe 20, 30 years ago, there was fun, you know, Attitude Era antics going on and a handful of amazing wrestlers. But right now, there will never, it's never been this much great competition and wrestlers who are just so good wanting to get a chance. Obviously, there's been different ratings. There's been different creative. And it was a little not so PG. But I'm so excited to see it. There's two-thirds of every roster does some of the craziest stuff that I wouldn't even be able to do in a video game. And being out there for that and involved in it, it makes me excited as a fan of it.
So do you have a preference on which brand you'll end up on?
No, because it becomes two live shows competing head-to-head. So now, broken in half, anybody who went from maybe being on Superstars or Main Event now becomes a factor in how the ratings will do on a live television show. It's amazing. It is such a huge opportunity for every superstar, whether it be a backstage segment, a 30-second interview, anything. Everybody becomes an important factor for the brand succeeding. It's a great time for the business.
We've already seen some guys from NXT make their way to the WWE roster. Do you expect a lot more once this brand extension happens, especially immediately once it happens?
Honestly, I don't know how that will work exactly. I know there's a bunch of superstars and divas that are ready to go, but even with the expansion into the two shows, it's two huge rosters, and there already has been in the last couple of months several NXT superstars coming up and making a name for themselves. So to just water it down with talent and having them sitting on the bench, I don't think that's a great idea. Slowly but surely, just like it always has the last 100 years, NXT superstars will come up and make their way into the mix. Some will make it and some won't. But for now, when you break this brand into two, whether they come up right away or over the next year or two, it's a chance and opportunity for so many superstars who never had a chance before.
How difficult is that when it comes to different guys joining the roster, especially ones from NXT, in that you want to make sure that everybody fits in and everybody has a role, but there's so many different talented guys and there's only so much TV time?
That's been the story of wrestling for the last 50 years. There's only so much TV time. But if someone like myself, who I was told a long time ago, if you get 30 seconds or 30 minutes, have them remember you and make the most of it. And I did. And I'm someone who loses 80 to 90% of the time. And when I lost, I said, if I put my body on the line, if I told the best story, if I stood out, if my gear was different, if my attitude toward fighting was different, if anything that stood out, I found a way to stay around and keep revamping myself and my character. And still, someone who's barely 6 foot tall and 200 pounds and loses almost all the time is still one of the most cheered superstars and finds a way to keep going. So when all this talent comes through, some make it, some don't. Some get bigger opportunities than others. Some people debut and beat John Cena. Some people debut and lose to R-Truth. That's what happened to me in my count out. So everything is different. Some people get a debut match where they're just backstage. You never know the opportunity you're going to get, and you're never going to know how good everyone can be without the best opportunities. But just as it goes with time, it comes down to trying to find a spot, make yourself stand out, be better than everyone else, and put the time and effort and try and make yourself the go-to guy no matter what the situation.
Last couple of things. You are also going to be in the upcoming action movie Countdown. What was the experience like doing that?
It was a blast. It's the first time I ever went away from WWE for more than 2 weeks. And I was gone for about 5 weeks in Vancouver. We did 14 to 16-hour days, and I had a blast engulfing myself into this movie and doing everything I could, much like in a wrestling match or with WWE, that no matter what the situation, I went above and beyond. And just like the crew, everyone involved, the director, everybody wanted this to be such a great success that we all worked so hard. And with everyone working hard around me, I owed it to them to give them my best, and I felt like I did.
I've seen the trailer. What was it like having Rusev pull a gun on you?
Without giving up too much of the story there, he doesn't pull the gun. It gets knocked out of someone else's hand. But the fun part was filming with someone like Rusev, to where I had been working with actors for a week, and I was filming something with him, and he knows, like, he can, he's beaten me up before in WWE, so he could throw me through a wall or he could push me down and be okay. We wouldn't have to Hollywood it up so we could do it for real. And we did so many times him pushing me through a wall that we broke 3 walls and they said we couldn't do it anymore.
That sounds about right. So last thing, obviously you've been getting into stand-up comedy for the last few years. How's your act coming along?
It's actually pretty good. The last time I did Kowloon's in Boston, we had a 7:30 and 9:30, something like that show. That one was sold out and one was 90%, and that's like 250 people each show. And it was such a blast to see the wrestling fans and people who had just been in town, you know, to see a comedy show and have it go so well. And my last set, I got about 17 minutes in. It wasn't all dynamite because I need about 5,000 more reps. But I'm getting there slowly but surely. And at the end of the day, it's all just to be a better WWE superstar. So it's such a blast. And give it a chance. And anytime you see guys like that, like, next time we set something up, I'm going to try and have Cesaro and Zack Ryder and Miz involved and just showing some people that these guys, you know, they're not just that character on TV. They can actually be pretty funny.
One more thing, being a Clevelander, how are you feeling about your Cavs against the Warriors in the NBA Finals?
Most importantly, the Lake Erie Monsters are up 1-0 over Hershey. Ooh. For the Calder Cup. They won last night 4-1. Anyway, no big deal. But tonight, Cleveland's excited. Cleveland deserves it, and it's going to be really fun. Hopefully it's a great series, and hopefully Cleveland comes out and gets that first national championship. Because, you know, Miz has been WWE champion. I've been world heavyweight champion. The Monsters are on their way to winning the Calder Cup. The Indians are in first place. We'll talk about the Browns some other time. But most importantly, the Cavs are playing on the biggest stage of them all to win, and the story is there. The Curry and LeBron and Kyrie, it's all there to have a great series. Everyone's going to be watching. This is the chance for Cleveland to finally get one.
Season two of Swerved, the entire season drops on Raw or on Monday. Immediately following Raw, it'll be out on the WWE Network. Dolph, thanks for the time, man. Appreciate it, and keep up the great work.
You got it, man. Take it easy.
In case you can't tell, Dolph is a pretty smart guy, very quick-witted. He's extremely intelligent. He makes some points about the upcoming WWE brand split or brand extension, as he likes to call it. So we'll see exactly where that goes. And Swerve Season 2 coming out Monday, immediately following Raw, all 9 episodes, so you can binge-watch on the WWE Network. Everybody can check that out. And we'll see exactly where this upcoming brand extension goes. It's not too far away. On July 19th, we will be finding out all the particulars about that. And maybe we'll even know in advance of that. But July 19th is when SmackDown goes live on USA beginning on Tuesday. So, you know, we don't even know when the draft is going to be. That's going to be upcoming and where everybody's going to be going. You know, they're going to be on Raw. Are they going to be on SmackDown? But that's part of the fun in wrestling is that that stuff is coming up. And we can all look forward to it. So let's get to my second interview on this podcast. That is with Ring of Honor star ACH. He's going to be part of the Best in the World pay-per-view, which is coming up on Friday, June 24th in Concord, North Carolina. No idea who he's going to face yet. And we talk about that here in the interview with him. But ACH is a guy whose star has been on the rise. Super athlete, great worker in Ring of Honor. So, let's get to it. Here's my interview with ACH. He is Ring of Honor star ACH. It's a busy time for Ring of Honor as they're going to be doing Best of the World shows coming up here, leading up to the Best in the World pay-per-view coming up on June 24th. So how's everything going, my man?
Everything is going good. I can't complain. Life is great.
Here's the most important thing. How important was it for you, and how much do you enjoy your new Jordan shoes?
I am extremely excited. I'm actually leaving for St. Louis to go pick up the shoes tomorrow. My friend got them for me because I wasn't able to get them here in Texas. But it's not really important, but it is cool to have them. I happen to be a collector of Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant tennis shoes. So anything that adds to the collection is always exciting.
I'm glad to know that you're big on the Mamba because I'm a big Lakers fan. So that warms my heart right there. How many pairs of Jordans do you have right now?
Currently, at the moment, I have 10 pair.
Okay. So, and it's tough to come by them. I mean, you're talking about like the vintage, you know, perfect condition, real Jordans, isn't it?
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. And I only go for a certain, I mean, since I started collecting, it seems like there's a pair that comes out every week. So it's such a hard task to try to figure out like which ones I do and do not want. And for the most part, they usually just sit in the box until I decide to wear them. Usually when I get tennis shoes, I just wear them out. But now I've learned to actually handle them with a lot more care now, so I don't wear them as much as I would like, but I wear them enough.
Yeah, you can't get dirt on those things, man. Those are a conversation starter and for special occasions. They're not just for going out on the town just, you know, any night of the week.
Oh, well, I mean, yeah, I mean, I've actually gotten out of the fear of traveling with them on, like on flights and stuff like that. I usually bring an old pair of shoes just to travel in, just for comfort, my own comfort. But, I mean, for the most part, I have a lot of stuff that actually helps me, you know, keep them clean and keep them in good condition to make them look like, you know, they just came right out the box. So, you know, I'm pretty secured in all angles as far as taking care of them.
Do you have them on display at the house, like a nice shelf where everybody can come by if they're in your home and can see them, or are they tucked away in a private spot?
They are tucked away in a private spot in my closet. A friend of that is like, why don't you just put them on display for everyone to see? It was like, well, because I actually wear them. They're not trophies. Like, I enjoy buying them. I'm fascinated by them, but they're not trophies. Plus, I wouldn't want to put my shoes, like, you know, in my living room or somewhere for everybody to be like, oh, you got a lot of shoes.
To some people, Air Jordans are trophies, and it's bragging rights for people that have, like, the real ones, and you have a bunch of them when you collect them. That's a big deal for some people. I mean, you collect them, and there's plenty of other people that collect them as well. You know, it's a big deal.
Yeah, it is. The shoe community is a very, 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 very serious topic amongst the people that collect them. And, I mean, like I said, I just started maybe earlier this year. And, like, I mean, I've gotten some really cool connections with people, and I've become friends with people. I've actually met, like, maybe one or two people off the internet just because, you know, I've reached out as far as, like, trying to find a particular shoe, and people have hit me up, and they've, you know, have been very generous with sharing their, you know, their connections and, you know, people that can help me get the shoes that I want. So, I mean, it's pretty fun, actually, to, you know, meet people that are interested in shoes just like you are. I know it can be very expensive, and some people don't look at it as like a collection. It's more of like, oh, why would you do that or whatever? But, I mean, I enjoy it a lot, man. I think it's cool. I love shoes. I can't help it.
Who has a better shoe collection right now, you or Shane McMahon?
Oh, man, definitely Shane McMahon. But Shane McMahon, the one thing I appreciate about Shane McMahon's collection is it's all he loves the classic Air Jordan retros.
Yeah.
Like, he has a bunch of Jordan retros. And when I first started off, I was actually going to stick with a particular shoe. But then, I mean, once I started branching out, I was just like, oh, man, like, there's just so many shoes. And then once I got my first pair of Kobe's, I was addicted to Kobe. So, you know, I'm just going for any Jordan that catches my eye and any Kobe that catches my eye.
Well, you're 28 years old now. So how much Jordan did you actually get to see when it comes to his playing days?
Oh, man. Dude, I've seen a good deal of Jordan play, man. Like, I remember actually, you know, looking at the report as a kid of the flu game, of the, you know,
yeah.
Even though they just came. I remember watching that flu game. I remember the game. I remember my biggest memory to basketball, and it translates into wrestling, was during the Utah-Chicago game series, where Karl Malone and Dennis Rodman got into their little tiff, and then it carried over to WCW. And I remember thinking as a kid, like, that was the coolest thing to me, you know, being a Michael Jordan fan, and everybody was a Bulls fan. And then I was a WCW fan growing up. So, you know, having those two worlds kind of interacting amongst each other was actually pretty awesome to me as a kid.
Well, when it comes to you following the NBA, are you someone that isn't necessarily a fan of a team, but you're more of a fan of players?
Oh, man. I am a Spurs fan. I'm a huge Spurs fan. Never, ever to go undocumented. I am a huge Spurs fan. But I do have fascination. I am a fan of certain players. Growing up, it was I was a huge Vince Carter fan growing up. I was always a fan of his athleticism. And as a kid, you know, I liked, you know, action, you know, just, you know, action, I guess you would say. And his dunk had just a lot of showmanship and a lot of action to me. And then when I got a little bit older, when I got into wrestling, I guess, or as far as when I got into the business, I started reading more about backstories and certain things. And Michael Jordan's story was just a little bit more fascinating with me. I was fascinated with Michael Jordan's story and everything that he went through. And then when you hear, like, some of the backstories to, like, some of the games leading up, you know, leading up to some of the games, like, it was fascinating. The dude had, like, one of the best, like, never-say-die attitude, you know, like, just everything about Michael Jordan, you know, I just absolutely admire. You know, people always tell me, oh, you know, he's a bad person. Like, well, I've never met him. He's never done anything to me. But as far as the athlete, Michael Jordan, probably the greatest thing I've ever seen in an athlete. Like, it's just, he has so much tenacity, like, so much confidence, and it's a very calm confidence that I always appreciate, that I always try to, like, carry myself with. So I always appreciate that.
Yeah, there's certain traits that you could take away from people that you don't know. I mean, you look at Jordan, you look at Kobe, and I think the things that you take away from them are just their confidence and just their will to succeed. I mean, look at how hard those guys work at their trade. I mean, people don't realize like the, you know, what they would put their bodies through and how much, you know, time they would spend to work on their craft to become the players that they became.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I remember I heard a story once about Michael Jordan during the era where he was having trouble getting to the, he was having trouble getting past the Detroit Pistons. And they said that Michael Jordan, the last time he lost to the Pistons in the NBA playoffs, they said he walked off the court crying. And they said that after that, he completely changed his body. He got stronger because this was during the Bad Boys era.
That was in 1990 you're talking about, because 91 is when Jordan and the Bulls first won their first title.
Right. And so, yeah, so it was during the Bad Boys era, and they were saying how Jordan walked off the court crying, and, you know, the Bad Boys, Isaiah Thomas and those guys, they just pretty much bullied them on the court. And then they said the following year was like, you know, it was as if it was written in the Bible or something. It was just like Jordan became Jordan, and, you know, the rest is history, you know. So just to show, just for like for him to be able to overcome something like that at that time, that era in basketball, you know, it's pretty huge, you know?
Yeah. Well, how do you carry that over to you when it comes to your wrestling career and what you do to prepare and take your career to where it's gone right now?
It's a never say die attitude. It's that mentality. It's the mentality of, I know I'm going to lose and I know I'm going to fail, but as long as I keep picking myself back up and as long as I learn from that and I get better each day, there's no one that can stop me. I always like to believe that Jordan had a confidence that was internal, and you didn't really see it. You only saw it when he was really on the court. And that's how I try to carry myself. You know, when I'm outside the ring, I try to have, you know, a very humble presence about me. I try to be respectful to others and, you know, just try to be as nice as I can. But when I'm in the ring, I turn it up. You know, I try to have, you know, the biggest confidence allure, but it's one of those things that you can't be like, man, this dude is cocky, this is arrogant, but it's one of those things you can sense, you can feel. It makes you want to get behind it, necessarily hate it. You know, most of the NBA players today, you know, you see them on the court, you're like, this guy's arrogant, man, I don't want to reach my heart. For instance, Mayweather. A lot of people like Mayweather because he's just confidence all around. Some people will say there's nothing humble about him, but he's good. You can't deny that he's good. You know, but, you know, to me, when I saw Jordan, like, you just knew you could smell his confidence. He didn't have to tell you how good he was. He always showed you. And I always try to have that motto in my life. You know, I don't want to tell you how good I am. I want to show you how good I am.
Well,
and honestly, I felt, I'm sorry?
No, keep going.
No, I was just going to end it with, I also believe that Jordan never changed. As far as like his ability on the court, he never changed. I always felt like he fought to be himself, and I try to be that. You know, I try to carry myself in that manner. I always want to be myself. You know, I've always had that uphill challenge as far as people wanting me to do things differently or people wanting me to tweak things about me. But I've always gone against the wind my entire life, and I've always fought to just be me, and if, you know, people don't accept it, they just don't accept it, you know?
Yeah, well, how difficult is that to do in a business like wrestling? Because it is so much different than almost anything else that people experience, where you are trying to put layers of yourself out there, but at the same time, you're also being somebody else that you're asked to do because it is entertainment.
Right. Oh, it's very hard. It's very hard because sometimes, you know, it can affect your in-ring, you know, presentation, and it can also affect, you know, how you interact with people in the back. But to me, it's all about how you present it, and it's all about how confident you are in the ability in your abilities for it to work. You know, like, there's a lot of things people have always told me, especially being in the Ring of Honor locker room, I was always told, like, oh, that's not going to work. That's too cheesy. That's not what a Ring of Honor is all about. You're so childish. You're so you know, you're like a big kid, like you should grow up. But to me, it's like, I am an adult. I am very well put together. I am, you know, just because I'm into different things than everyone else, it doesn't make me different than anyone else. Like, who are you to tell me what doesn't work for me? Like, just because it works for you doesn't mean it's going to work for me. You know, I'm going through a lot of that as far as the Ring of Honor locker room goes. Everybody, you know, they're, you know, they try to help me in their eyes, and they've always told me, like, maybe you should do this and maybe you should do that. But, you know, I'm very confident that me just being myself will work. And I always tell people, you know, I want that to translate in my wrestling, and I want that to translate in just everyday life. You know, I want to really start a campaign where I promote, you know, people to be themselves, because I feel like in today's world, you know, they tell you you can be anything, but they don't tell you that you can be yourself. You know, they tell you you can do this, you can do that, you can do this, this, and, you know, so on and so on. But they never really tell you to just really be yourself. And I feel like when people start being themselves and express themselves the way that they want, I think that's when the world will be able to really, you know, just let a lot of these things down. I just feel like people are afraid of things that they don't understand. And I feel like people should take the time to learn certain things about certain people instead of just turning away from them.
Well, you've been with Ring of Honor for 4 or 5 years now. How do you feel that you fit in with the rest of the locker room? Is it still a little bit of an uphill battle for you, or do you think things are settling in now you've been there for a little while?
Well, things are settling in now. I feel like people kind of accept me for who I am, just, you know, me. And, you know, people have always tried to put labels on it, and I kind of feel that I've fought those labels, and I've, you know, quietly, you know, told them, like, you know, this is just me, either like it or love it. And I feel like they accept it now, you know.
Well, you know, like I said, you know, you've been wrestling for, I believe, about 9 years now. So how do you feel your career's progressed, and how close do you feel like you are to hitting your prime?
My career has gone through a lot, and I am very humbled and blessed to be able to experience a lot of things that I have. I think it's progressed very well. At times it felt like it wasn't, but I feel like it was just a very slow build. And as far as, you know, the climb, like they say, you know, some people take the ladder, some people take the stairs or however, you know, I feel like I had a very long journey as far as the stairs. I crawled up the stairs until I was able to actually walk. But as far as me hitting my prime, I don't even like to think about it, because when I hit my prime and when I feel like I've hit my prime, and then I'm going to be telling myself, well, when is this going to end? I got to enjoy this, you know, while I can. I don't even want to think about it. I just want to keep enjoying the ride as fast as, or as best as I can, you know. I don't even like to think about stuff like that.
Yeah, you know, and I think the good thing for you now is at this point in your career, I think, you know, I think a lot of people actually know who you are. I mean, that's always a fight, especially in the culture of wrestling right now, because there are so many different people that are out there and try to make a name for yourself and try to put yourself on the map. Do you feel like you're in a good place for that a lot of people know who you are and know what you do?
Yeah, I feel like people know who I am, but I constantly remind myself that they don't, because it just makes me want to reach out and, you know, it just makes me want to reach out and get more people to know who I am, you know? I always feel like it's me against the world, and I'm going to continue to try to put people in my corner as much as I can through my art, you know, by expressing myself.
Why do so many wrestlers have that mentality of me versus the world?
I think it's the background stories. I feel like, you know, a lot of us, when we choose wrestling as our career choice, a lot of people don't buy into it, you know. Usually when you're like, oh, I want to be a professional wrestler, not everybody jumps to your side quickly. You know, there's usually a lot of doubters, and there's usually a lot of people that don't believe that this is an actual real job, or it has like good endings with it, you know, just because of a lot of the stories that have come up from the past. And so you just grow that attitude where it's just me versus them, or me versus, you know, me against the world.
I know that you still have aspirations of working for New Japan. You've also got an opportunity to work with some of those guys recently, including Kushida. How much have you enjoyed that?
Oh, man, my match with Kushida was off the charts, man. I loved it. Not to take anything away from Kushida, but I personally am a fave. My favorite match this year against any of New Japan talent would have to be against Naito. That was definitely one of my favorite matches in New York that happened about 2 weeks ago now.
So when do you think, or how far away do you think you are for an opportunity to actually go to Japan and work for New Japan on a heavier basis?
You know, after my showing, after the tour that happened a couple of weeks ago, I think some things could happen here pretty soon. You know, I think things are looking up for me. I'm healthy and I'm making a lot of better decisions nowadays. So I feel like something can happen pretty soon.
Yeah, it's funny because the decision making you talk about, how much different is that now? Because I think for some people there was a little bit of a reputation of immaturity, you know, probably about 3-4 years ago. And it's something that, you know, whether it's true or not, once you get a label, it's tough to overcome in this business.
It is. And again, as far as what people say about my reputation, I just think a lot of people look at the things that I'm into, and I feel like it's more of a intellectual complex or a superior complex for it. Like, you know, yeah, I like cartoons and video games and anime and stuff like that. People will just see that and they'll just slap a label on it without actually having an intellectual, you know, just a smart conversation with me or opening up with me or talking to me. They just see those things and they just instantly go, oh, he's a child. And, you know, I didn't do my best as far as making some right decisions. You know, a lot of those things were out of my control, but I take full responsibility on them. But, you know, nowadays I'm making sure that whatever I do, I'm in control of a lot of I'm in control of a lot more than I was 3 or 4 years ago, you know? Mm-hmm. So when something does go bad, you know, it's all on me, you know?
Right. Well, there shouldn't be a stigma about watching cartoons and playing video games because you're far from the only person in wrestling that does that. And there's guys that, you know, are, you know, whether they're Ring of Honor or in WWE, there's tons of guys that do that. It's just something to do to, you know, have fun and blow off steam and, you know, have a good time with your friends. It's funny that some people, it depends on who you know, but for some people to have a stigma because you're an adult, you play video games, and for other people, it's totally gone, especially with the way the video game community is now.
Yeah, exactly. I just think a lot of it had to do with the way that I carried myself in the locker room. I wasn't like walking around, you know, like a stick in the mud or anything, but I was very joyful, if you will. I still do to this day have a childlike exuberance about me. And, you know, that's just me, you know, I can't help it. That's just who I am, you know, and I love to talk about the things that I'm into. And of course, you know, when I'm in a locker room full of men, you know, 30 and older, they don't know. Half the time, they don't even know what it is that I talk about, which I've always found it fascinating that Alex Shelley and Chris Sabin, you know, since they've come back into the locker room, you know, they're in their, you know, early 30s, up maybe mid-30s, I believe. I can talk to them about all those things, video games, anime, cartoons, you know. So, you know, it's been real cool to have those guys in the locker room, and they don't, you know, break apart my personality or anything, or they don't read too much into it. You know, I'm able to just kind of relax and be myself around those guys. Not taking anything away from the rest of the locker room. You know, I have great conversations about sports with, you know, Jay Briscoe. Me and Moose have odd conversations. So, you know, I can talk about other things besides the things that I like. I'm interested in a lot of things.
Well, what's your thoughts about the landscape of wrestling right now? Because I think this is one of the more interesting times you've seen in a while between all the different promotions that are, you know, having success, the amount of talent that's out there and the buzz that everybody's getting. And then, you know, there's always who's going to go where and, you know, how this is all going to play out over the next few years.
I think it's like an indie boom. Wrestling is popular again. I don't even know what you would call this generation of wrestlers. I remember the last time wrestling was really this popular was maybe during the Attitude Era. And so I don't even know what to call this, but it's a great time for wrestling, man. It is great. It's exciting. It's actually, it's pretty cool to turn on ESPN and have them covering wrestling on that. That's how you know wrestling's come a long way. And, I mean, people are watching, you know, promotions like they would NFL teams, and everybody's curious to know who's going to go where and someone's contract expires. It's a good time. It's fun. I love it. My favorite thing is to, like, keep people on their toes when people ask me questions about, like, WWE or any other large promotion. You know, I just love to just kind of, like, throw them off, make them, you know, make them wait or, you know, make them guess. It's fun. It's exciting.
Yeah, I was going to say, how do you approach that thing? Because I'm sure you're one of the guys, especially being in the Ring of Honor and everything that's going on right now, people are always going, so do you want to go to WWE? If you do, when do you think you could go? Or, you know, you got a tryout, you know, a few years ago. So, you know, they honestly know who you are, you know, because they've seen you up close and personal, you know, on top of you working elsewhere like Ring of Honor. So how do you respond to that?
How do I usually respond to that? I usually just tell them, of course, I want to go to WWE. But right now, my heart and my love and my talent is in Ring of Honor. And that ain't changing for a very long time. I'm having a really good time in Ring of Honor. I'm just having a really good time in life right now. And, you know, you never know what can happen. But as far as right now, all my heart and my talent is going into Ring of Honor. And I'm going to do my best to make that company the best promotion in the world. I mean, it already is, but I want to do more to put it on a bigger scale than what it is now. I want to go somewhere and put a helping hand and make it the best, you know?
Absolutely. So, but I have to ask the question then. So does the WWE Cruiserweight tournament that they're getting ready to do, does that interest you?
Is that interesting? Oh, absolutely. I think it's great that they're going to be showcasing some of the best wrestlers, not only in WWE, but around the world. So, you know, it just means more exposure for a lot of guys that have worked hard, especially the guys in England. Those guys work hard. You know, they don't have any TV exposure, you know, so a lot of those guys, you know, they pray to come to, like, America or Japan and get the exposure that they need. So I think it's great.
Do you have interest in being a part of it?
Do I have interest in being part of it?
Yeah.
If I wasn't working with Ring of Honor, yeah, but I'm with Ring of Honor, so.
Right. Well, you're under contract, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So you can be interested in all you want, but you are more than just your heart and soul, but your signature is under contract with Ring of Honor.
Absolutely. And I'm happy. I mean, I'm happy where I'm at. So, you know, no love lost there. So.
Yeah. You know, and it's funny because it's something that it's kind of this weird mixed bag in that, you know, there's so many wrestling fans, and you can group me into this as well, I'm sure, but we love seeing guys doing what they're doing with a Ring of Honor, a New Japan, or a Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, wherever. But there's always this talk about WWE, but at the same time, it's like, okay, are they going to be a different person than what I see in WWE? Or it's kind of like, you know, should you just be happy where they're at right now and let what happens down the line? Or are we rushing to kind of always push on somebody saying, hey, why aren't you in WWE yet? It's kind of this weird dynamic.
I just think WWE's been around for so long that, you know, they're far from ever not existing. And so they built themselves the reputation of, you know, if you're here, you've made it. So fans have that opinion about WWE where, you know, it's like, I want you to go to WWE because then in my eyes, you've made it. But, you know, a lot of people don't realize, you know, me signing a contract when I was, what, 24 years old? You know, like, in some wrestlers' eyes, it's like, you've made it, you know? So, you know, I appreciate a lot of people wanting you to go to WWE and, you know, tap into that fan base and you know, see what you can do under their umbrella. You know, that's pretty cool. You know, people want you to always, you know, progress in your career. That's awesome.
Let me get your thoughts about one of the hot button topics right now. I'm sure you've seen the match between Will Ospreay and Ricochet from over the weekend at New Japan. What's your thoughts about that match?
Man, that was a great athletic exhibition, man. That was awesome.
I agree. And I guess I was a little bit surprised by the quote-unquote firestorm that it created, because it's something, like you said, you know, it's an athletic display. There were some people that said that's not real wrestling. They weren't selling. There wasn't psychology. How do you address that?
You know, I'm not one to say that those guys are out of style or, you know, they're not with the times and, you know, this and this. My thing on that is, if you were to bring me a rap album from today's generation rappers, I would take it apart. But I guarantee you there's going to be 500 people that be telling me I was crazy and I wasn't with the times and I didn't understand. It's their personal opinion. You know what you want to watch, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's just how it goes. Like, for people to attack other people because they're giving their opinion, it's ridiculous. Because you're giving your opinion in return to his opinion. So it's like, who's winning here in this, you know?
Right.
I just think it's ridiculous.
I think one of the great things about wrestling right now is there are so many different things that people can sample. And if you don't like something, that's perfectly fine. You're entitled to your own opinion. You can like what you want. You could dislike what you want. But I don't think it takes away from anybody else if they like something that you don't like. That's one of the things that social media opens up to. It's like, oh, you don't like this and I like it. So it's like everybody has to be on the same page. That's just not going to happen. Doesn't mean we can't have a good constructive conversation about it, but you know, there's a lot of great things that people can enjoy, and if you don't like something, you can move on and try something else.
Exactly. And I believe it was Vader that made the comment, like, people just attacked him and bashed him, and it was just like, man, you guys gotta understand, man, that guy's a legend, you know, that guy's been here, done that. And maybe he's just not accustomed to watching wrestling like that. Rhea Ripley, on the other hand, enjoyed the match. He thought it was great. You know, and you can't tell me Regal doesn't have the same respect as Vader. Like,
right.
Come on, man.
Well, I mean, so, and Vader's from a different era. I mean, he wrestled in a different era, you know, when it was during his prime, and it was just a different style. And, you know, wrestling continues to evolve all the time. You know, so That's the fun thing. I mean, there was guys in the that wrestled in the 50s and 60s that probably thought the guys in the 70s were doing too much in the ring.
Yeah, exactly. Even Regal just wrote a report about that, or he just wrote like a blog where he said, you know, I can't remember the exact names, but he said they would go out there and people said they were killing the business. And he was like, this was in the 80s, and I was just like, exactly, man.
Yeah.
Wrestling evolved. And, you know, like, you either like it or not. Just, it doesn't, as long as it doesn't, if it don't affect your pay, it don't affect your day. You know?
Yeah. I don't think we're close to killing the business yet. I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon.
Yeah, exactly. As long as wrestling is interesting and people keep tuning in, that wrestling will always flourish. It'll always be good.
So you got Best in the World pay-per-view coming up on June 24th. Any idea who you might be facing or what to expect for that show?
I don't know yet, but if I had it my way, personally, I'd be putting my hands on Silas Young. But that's just between me and management. So if they want to make that happen, I'd be more than happy. Put my hands on Silas Young. He just personally just doesn't like me because he doesn't like my personality. He doesn't know me personally, and he just feels that I'm a big kid. So it's whatever.
Hey, go out in the ring and you study your differences, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'll show him who's a man. I mean, I pay my own bills. I pay my taxes. So what makes me different than anyone else?
So here's another important question for me. When can we expect to see Stone Cold ACH make a return?
Oh man! Every now and then, I like to give people glimpses. If I'm in the receiver building, sometime soon in the near future, the glimpses of there'll be a full Stone Cold ACH return.
Last thing, let me bring up your training, because I know you've been tweeting about this and putting some stuff on Instagram as well. So, how much are you getting into CrossFit now? And then on top of that, I just see some other kind of training that you're doing. So you're going out and doing the running and pull-ups and push-ups and everything about wearing the 20-pound vest and everything now?
Yes, yes. Yeah.
That's some heavy-duty stuff there.
It is, it is. It's fun. Overall, it's fun, man. It was all for a good cause, though, for Murph, the military soldier that died a couple of years ago, and every Memorial Day, every year, they honor him by doing this workout. And I was told that you don't have to, but it's encouraged to do it with a 20-pound vest just because it's supposed to have some type of, like, military effect. That's how they do it in the military. So I felt like the best way to honor him was do it the way that he would do it. So I did it in a 20-pound vest in 90-degree weather.
Jeez. I can only imagine how much weight you lost during that workout.
I'm pretty sure I lost a great deal of weight. Even my dog joined in on the one mile with me, so I was excited.
Well, you know, it's good training, man. I mean, that's the thing. Everybody is staying in unbelievable shape to be able to do all the moves and things that you can do and have the matches that you guys have. So you got to do what you got to do to keep up with the business, right?
Absolutely, man. And, I mean, I ain't getting no older. So, you know, I want to be in the best shape I can be every day. So I want to be healthy, the healthy lifestyle.
Well, everybody can follow you on Twitter. It is at GoGoACH. Instagram is a GoACHGo. And won't be too long. Best in the World coming up Friday, June 24th for Ring of Honor on pay-per-view. Appreciate the time, ACH. And hope everything keeps going well for you in the career. And the Jordan collection continues to grow.
Thank you.
Interesting conversation there with ACH. I know that he had some heat on him a few years back from Ring of Honor and from some of the boys. I know he missed a flight to get to an iPay-per-view that was in Toronto, Canada a few years ago, and he got buried on the air by Jay Lethal, and there was a lot of question marks about his future with Ring of Honor. I think he's one of these guys that you can't excuse something like that when you miss your flight unless there's, you know, extreme circumstances. But when it comes to just his personality, I think he's very talkative. I think he's very outgoing. I think he's somebody that likes having conversations and being super friendly with people and just being able to talk about anything and everything, which can come off the wrong way sometimes, but I don't think there's any bad intentions behind it. I think he's a confident dude, but at the same time, you know, he's trying to be humble and he's trying to do the best job that he can when it comes to, you know, his wrestling career. And I think he's going to have some options coming up here. You know, we talked about that cruiserweight tournament, and he says he's not going to be a part of it. Whether he ends up in WWE or not, I think he's going to be just fine, you know, when it comes to his career. But obviously he has a goal, and that's a good goal to have. That's what he wants to do. But in the meantime, he's doing bigger and better things in Ring of Honor. The recent matches that he's had with New Japan Stars and his upcoming program with Silas Young. So he's doing good right now, and, you know, his track, his trajectory is going to go wherever it goes, and it seems like he's got his head on right, and he's working towards that, and it's just trying to win people over and do the right thing and make sure that he gets accepted behind the scenes, which, believe it or not, is a big part of the business, whether that's right or wrong. That is a part of it, and he's got to make sure that he has the right allies as well, and but most importantly, he's got to go out there, and he's got to perform. And he's got to have fun with it, and he's got to entertain. And I think he's got a lot of that down. I think we need to know a little bit maybe more of his personality. But I like what I see from ACH. He's fun, he's entertaining, and I wish him the best. Appreciate everybody again for listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes or on Stitcher and rate and review the podcast. That helps out tremendously for us in getting ranked higher and getting more comments and getting more feedback. I always appreciate the feedback, and we can have a conversation. You can tweet me. It's at Brian Fritz, and you'll find out all about the other things I do there, including all the different columns that I'm doing for Sporting News. I punch out at least 3 columns a week on Sporting News. So on Tuesday, it's like a Raw review. Wednesday, it's usually a quick interview. And a lot of times I try to use the full interviews with those talents or people here on the podcast. And then on Thursday, it's the Getting a Grip column, which Sporting News decided to title that way. But it's fine. But that's like the 5 biggest news stories of the week. So everybody can check that out by going to Sporting News. I always tweet out the stories, so follow me on Twitter. It's the easiest way to find it, and you can click on my stories there. And, of course, you can go to BetweenTheRopes.com, or you can go to SoundCloud.com/BetweenTheRopes to find the podcast there as well. And, by the way, on SoundCloud, you know, if you have a website, you like the podcast, and you want to help spread the word about Between the Ropes, the great thing about the podcast on SoundCloud is that the player looks nice and easily embeddable on your websites. So please share the podcast, tell other people around it, spread the word. And I hope everybody enjoys the podcast and what we're doing. A couple more coming up next week. I should have my regular podcast talking about Raw. I believe Michael is going to be back for that. And it looks like Kevin Eck, former WWE creative team member and friend of mine, is going to be on the podcast next week. And a conversation with Austin Aries, who is going to be facing Shinsuke Nakamura at the next TakeOver event, NXT TakeOver The End, which will be Wednesday night on the WWE Network. So thanks again, everybody, for listening. I'll talk to you next week.
The talking is over.
Thanks for downloading Between the Ropes.
Now, you guys are awesome. Thank you.
For more, go to BetweenTheRopes.com and subscribe to Between the Ropes on iTunes.
Thank you.
Have a nice day.